In case you missed this morning's Off The Ball breakfast,
we had this.
Can fans bottle?
Go on, I'm struggling. Is this a Cork hurling thing?
What is that, lad? I mean, Cork is new.
But like, yes. So any Cork hurling fans I've been talking to over the last few weeks, they're stricken by a kind of terror.
And we also had this.
The call to arms, like, Tipperary are at the exact same crack. I was in the Horse and Jockey last night, and Liam Cahill and Jake Morris were at the exact same crack. I hope the Tipperary fans can get a hold of tickets, because we are going to need them. And, well, Jesus, they were worth an extra point last weekend, weren't they?
Hey.
The way they celebrated Noel McGrath's wide into the hill. So
you can catch everything from this morning's Off The Ball breakfast elsewhere on the Go Loud app, and every weekday morning from 7:30.
The News Run on Off The Ball.
With UPMC Orthopaedic Care. When things don't move, rotate or bend like they used to, choose us to help you get back in action.
This is News Talk.
A very good evening to you. You're welcome along to Wednesday night's Off The Ball. It's Owen here with you until 10 o'clock this evening. Loads coming your way over the next 3 hours. We're going to kick things off from 7:30 with our mad defender Paddy Byrnes on the line. He's going to help us preview the All-Ireland football semi-finals this weekend. So he's played 3 of the 4 teams in the semi-finals, so he's got great insight into 75% of the teams that we're going to see at Croke Park this weekend. From 8 o'clock then, Anna Capeless is going to join us in studio for Wednesday night rugby. She was, of course, watching this morning's win for the Lions in Canberra against the Brumbies, and she's also going to be telling us what's next for her in terms of her playing days. She's on the way back from concussion, and trying to get back to playing rugby is proving challenging, to say the very least. Before 9 o'clock as well, we're also going to be catching up with Nakisa Badarian, who is the CEO of MVP Promotions, ahead of Taylor Serrano 3. So he's Amanda Serrano's manager. It'll be interesting to get his perspective ahead of the fight on Friday night. And then after 9, we're going to be hearing from Rachel O'Sullivan from Girls on the Ball on England hammering the Netherlands. 4-0 was the full-time score there at the Women's Euros today. And we're also going to have Stephen Doyle at Talcott Park for Shelburne versus Linfield throughout the afternoon. And watching all of that and keeping an eye on all of that is going to be Keith Tracy in studio as well. Keith, a very good evening to you.
Hello, Owen. Hello, everybody.
And we've also got Cameron Hill in studio for the News Round. Cameron, how are you getting on?
Greetings.
So we'll get over to Talcott Park pretty much immediately, because Stephen Doyle, this is a gigantic game for a number of different reasons. There is the Ireland versus Northern Ireland aspect to this. There is still trying to analyse where Shelburne are going in terms of their form at the moment. But the most basic of all is that this is such a huge opportunity for Shelburne to win this tie and to sort of open up a bit of a European run. If they win over the course of these two legs against Linfield, they will be playing European football until the end of August in some competition. So the champions' path, we've said it so many times, is so, so important. This is a massive opportunity for Shelburne, Steve-O.
Oh, it's huge, Owen. Yes, absolutely. And look, not to be vulgar about it, there is 1 million reasons as well for them to get through, and that is the money as well. But like you say, listen, all players are competitive. They all want to win trophies. They all want to succeed. They want to do well in the top competitions. And European football is something that a lot of footballers who play professional football in the UK don't get a chance to do, in the same way that footballers here in the SSE or Tristy Premier Division and also in the NIFL Premiership, it's something that they do get to do. And like, there's so much riding on this, as you say, in regards to if they win this match, they're guaranteed at least 3 ties, and also a really, really good chance of them getting into the group stage of the Europa Conference League. But aside from that as well, I was interested listening to David Healy, the Linfield manager, talking in the press conference. I know he put a clip out on the Off The Ball socials, and he was just saying about, look, we're not looking at this as an All-Ireland derby, you know, we're here to represent Linfield, yada, yada, yada. And I was recording our podcast, our LOI pod, earlier on today with Vinnie Perth and Gareth McLean, and I said it to them both, look, the players in the dressing room, whatever the manager says out front, they're all like, and especially the Linfield players, because there has been a gap in quality between the two leagues over the last kind of couple of decades. Generally, when the two leagues meet, it is the Premier Division team from here that win the tie. It's been very rarely where it's been the other way around, and there is a gap of quality, there's no doubt about it. Linfield certainly won their league last season by 22 points, but the gap between themselves and Shelburne, and look, the form team at the moment in Ireland is the Shamrock Rovers. And Linfield, if they were to play Shamrock Rovers, they would have no hope, I would say. But as well, with Shelburne, the quality that they have in their squad, they would be viewed as a better team. There are a couple of caveats to that, of course, with the departure of Damien Duff and, you know, some issues they've had with form themselves. But on the face of it, when you look at the two teams, Shelburne should be winning this. So that is something that is going to be absolutely motivating these Linfield players. They want to come here to Dublin and they will want to show that we are a real team. We are a team of professionals here and we can get the better of this, the champions of the Premier Division of Ireland.
Yeah, there's a real sense of pressure on that, Keith, for obvious reasons. And it feels like new pressure for this Shelburne team. Like it's not existential or anything like that, but in terms of opportunities that will be open for this club if they manage to be in European competition, certainly if they get to that big league in the Conference League, it would be absolutely sensational.
Yeah, it would be absolutely sensational. I think what Stephen is saying is right. There's a couple of little unknowns, although we feel like we know this Shelburne team over the last 4 years or so under Damien Duff. I don't think Joey will go in there and try and reinvent the wheel. I think the large majority of players he's picked is the same players that Damien Duff had picked. But tactically, there will be some tweaks. But look, I agree with what Steve was saying. All in all, I still expect Shelburne to win the tie, but I think Linfield are going to give them a really good game. They're no strangers to European football. This is the fifth time in the past seven seasons that they will attempt to qualify for the Champions League. So it just goes to show you they're used to being in these games. So I don't think Linfield will be coming here as cannon fodder. I think they will give it a right good go. I thought it was interesting that David Healy tried to, you know, shied away from the derby aspect. I know Damien Duff is not the Shelburne manager anymore, but he was leaning into it straight off the bat, saying it will have a derby feel. I think it will definitely have a derby feel. I think there will be a little bit of needle between the two teams because they're really close neighbours and both teams want to prove that they're the better league. Jamie Mulgrew is a 39-year-old midfielder who starts for Linfield tonight. So, you know, not to be ageist, but I would look at him and you think JJ Lunny, Mark Coyle, Kerr McEnroy, they've got to get round them. They've got to put all sorts of legs around them and make them feel like a 39-year-old in there. Fitzpatrick as well, the player who'll be playing through the middle for Linfield. He scored 12 goals this season. So all in all, look, they've got a 39-year-old, a 30-year-old and a 33-year-old on the pitch. You would imagine Shelburne, if they show the intensity that we associate with Shelburne, then I think they will get the job done. But as I say, I'm expecting it to be, you know, it'll be in the melting pot for a long, long time, but I expect Shelburne just to get their noses in front.
Anything out of the ordinary?
Can I just pick up on the derby point there as well? Actually, I think it's an interesting aspect of this game, and I mentioned this to Vinnie Perth as well. He said something he would have done when he was managing clubs in Europe was when he found out who the referee was going to be, he would go and watch a few videos of that ref's games, because discipline is going to be such a huge thing. Now, Luis Godinho is the referee for today. He's from Portugal. He has no clue about Shelburne versus Linfield and the fact that this will be treated like a derby match.
He can't say that between these two. He could be well versed on this rivalry. I think he's been watching the Santander Cup 2005 matchup for the last week.
But listen, Joe, there will be tackles flying in here. These two teams, and especially in midfield, it's going to be interesting to see at the start of this game what kind of tackles we see put in from both sides. But you can be guaranteed that the Shells, as in the Linfield lads, they're going to go in hard. They are going to treat it like a derby match. And if Coutinho doesn't realise that, you know, look, if this was Bohemians against Shells, the referee will come into this game knowing there's going to be a few hefty tackles at the start of the game. Let them go, let it flow. But I just wonder about Coutinho. I was looking through his record of European games. He likes a card, you know, a minimum of three I've seen in any of his European games, but anywhere up to 7, 8, 9 cards in a match. So the two sides are going to have to be wary of that, I think, and they're going to have to be careful.
Give us very quickly, Steve, the team news from a Shelburne standpoint.
Yeah, look, Shelburne are coming into this game off the back of that 3-1 win here against Cork City, a very convincing victory. And look, they got back-to-back draws in their first two matches against Joey O'Brien, so he has steadied the ship as such, and he's sticking with the team that got that 3-1 victory. Okay. Now, it's down in the Champions League page as a 4-3-3. I think he's going to go with the back three. It's Cairns in goal, Ledwidge, Barrett and Coyle the back three, Caffrey on the right wing-back position, Norris left wing-back, Lunny and McEnroy central midfield, Wood and Coos just ahead of them with Odebeck playing up front.
Very good. Stephen Doyle, thank you for that. We'll be back and over to Steve-O throughout the evening. Kickoff there is at 7:45. Now, the news round is here with UPMC Orthopaedic Care. When things don't move, rotate or bend like they used to, choose us to help you get back in action. And Cameron, it is Shelburne tonight that you're starting with.
Yeah, as you've just heard, Owen, Shelburne set off on their first Champions League adventure since 2005 inside the next hour. Joey O'Brien's side welcoming Linfield to Talca Park in the first round of qualifiers. And the Reds boss emphasised that European football will be an entirely different prospect for the defending Premier Division champions.
It's a tough game. Obviously, European football, especially two legs, you look over it, it's like four halves, really. You see enough video, they've seen enough video of us, but ultimately, until you get onto the pitch, the players, two sets of players, you're feeling each other out for a little while. Then the game sort of moves on from there, you know, and it's like, I'm sure in European football, my experience of it, yeah, you have some good halves and some bad halves, and ultimately, when you're having a good half, you make take advantage of that. Sometimes when you're in a bad half, you just stay in the game, knowing that it's going to turn around for you. And that's something that we would have touched on last year with the lads. Obviously, I think last year going into the game against Gibraltar, you're probably lacking a little bit of experience. But I think that run of Gibraltar and then playing FC Europe, you're seeing sort of how good and bad football can be, really, at European level and how ruthless it can be, you know. So I think we have great learnings from that to bring into this this tie, you know.
That first leg kicks off at 7:45 this evening.
Very good. Now we have some big potential transfer news.
Huge.
For Republic of Ireland forward.
Indeed. Evan Ferguson looks set for a loan move to Roma. So reports from Italian media today suggest that a deal has been agreed between the Serie A side and parent club Brighton. The 20-year-old had been linked with moves to fellow Premier League sides Everton and Leeds United already this summer. The Toffees have signed French forward Tierno Barry from Villarreal today in a deal worth just around €32 million. So that's probably put paid to a move for Ferguson there.
There's a lot that comes into my mind here straight away, Keith, about this potential. There's first of all one of his compatriots in Troy Parrott being able to be free of the glare of the English media and just the really high standard of the Premier League by going away, scoring a load of goals in the Eredivisie. I know Serie A is a step up from the Eredivisie. The other thing that comes to my mind is that you've got a manager like Gasperini going in with Roma from now, and just what he has done in terms of his career, you'd imagine he is right up there in terms of a manager a young player can work with. And if somebody's going to unlock Evan Ferguson's potential once again, she said, I'd like to see him play under this guy. They're kind of the first two things. I've got no idea if this is going to work out or not. I've got no idea if the system he wants to play is going to work very well. We know he'll probably play wing backs like that Atalanta team, and hopefully that'll benefit a striker leading the line. What's your gut instinct on this?
I think it's a dangerous move for Evan. You know, I know it's only a loan move, but you see, he went to West Ham last season, and you're thinking there's no strikers there. He's got to play. Mikel Antonio had the very unfortunate car crash. It was the German boy there that couldn't get a kick of a ball. Fulcrow couldn't really get a kick of a ball, but still he just couldn't find his way. He started playing Bowen through the middle. He goes to Roma, and there's people like Pablo Dybala there, El Shaarawy. You know, there's wingers. Dovak is there as well, Ukrainian international. So he will have some stiff competition to get into the team. Initially, you hear Evan Ferguson and Roma, the manager there as well. You're thinking, brilliant, it's a match made in heaven, but he will have to fight his way into that team. It's not a given that he's going to go in there and play. But if we can get an Irish international playing for Roma on a consistent basis, I can't remember the last Irish person to play in the Italian league off the top of my head, but it'd be brilliant for Evan Ferguson if he can play. But like I say, there'll be work to be done there.
There's surely been someone since Brady.
Well, I mean, James Abanko was playing for Udinese while on loan from Watford, and Festi as well.
Of course.
I don't know, you don't feel like someone like Gasperini where you feel like you've a clean slate as a player. Like, it seems like Hertzler, he's just out of favour with him, Ferguson. Yeah. And Gasperini might come in and say, look, you've got a chance here to prove yourself.
Yeah, and look, I look at it the same, probably the opposite way to that. Gasperini is the type of manager that won't be told who is going to play, or, you know, Evan is coming in on loan and you need to sort of favour him because he'll be coming in on loan. I don't think Gasperini will deal with those sort of those objectives. He will play who he wants to play. And like I say, the Dobak, the Ukrainian international, is a decent player. They've got Dybala there as well, who can play through the middle, a couple of other wingers. So Roma have some decent talent up the top of the pitch. But look, I'm sure Evan will know he'll have to fight for his place there. But, you know, you wouldn't want to be going to a team where you're going to play every single game, because if he was, it's not really much of a level for Evan. So I think it's good to have that competition.
Aaron Connolly was at Venezia, if I remember as well.
That's the bit that scares me because when Evan went to Venezia and didn't really happen, he just sort of fell off the face of the earth and everybody forgets him. When you look at Troy, you think, go out of the limelight. If it goes well, come back into the limelight. It's a brilliant move. If Evan goes there and it doesn't go well and he doesn't play a lot of games, where's the next move?
They paid €38 million for Dovbik, the Ukrainian forward that you mentioned there. He scored 24 goals in 36 La Liga games for Girona the previous season. obviously kind of very highly thought of, then Roma signed him. He scored 12 goals in 32 Serie A appearances, so a bit of a letdown for the transfer fee. So, like, he's coming there to contend with him, to try and go up against a guy of serious pedigree. Like, it is a very high standard. If, like, I mean, maybe you can play them both, but certainly with the system there, it's tended to be one focal point in attack under Gasperini in terms of the Champions League and Europa League games I've seen of Atalanta. So it's fascinating. I want this to happen because it would be a very interesting angle to watching Serie A football. Is it the best thing for Evan Ferguson? I don't know.
Yeah, well, look, Evan will have to do is score goals there, because Evan's a wonderful footballer, and maybe at the likes of a Brighton he can get away with setting up goals and being that assist player. I know he was, you know, people were linking him to being like a Harry Kane, dropping deep and being able to play those balls through. I'm not sure if those type of things will keep him in the Roma team. I think he will need to get in between 10 to 15 goals to keep the manager and players around him happy. I'm not sure, you know, being the build-up player will be enough, so we will have to add in those goals as well, the stats.
The only other thing is some of the other people who've maybe gone to Serie A and resuscitated a career that might have been staggering. Like, I'd like to get up Tammy Abraham's statistics there. It kind of felt like, I mean, not that he went on to Champions League level or anything like that, but things went okay for him there. Obviously, at a higher level of standard. Like, you had somebody like Lukaku and obviously Giroud, they come with just ridiculous pedigree, so you can't really be comparing Ferguson with them just yet. But players have left the Premier League to go to the Serie A in a forward position and done okay. So hopefully that's the way we can look at this, and that is what actually happens for Ferguson.
You have to feel that the real big winner out of this move is Nathan Murphy, who wouldn't mind a trip to Roma to watch Evan Ferguson next year, I'd feel.
Vinnie Pear to be right on the back of that as well.
That's it, yeah. Yeah, Uncle Vinnie, you know, in the corporate box in Stadio Olimpico. That's exactly where he belongs. There's a couple of other football stories, Cameron.
Yeah, Derry City have strengthened their striker reserves this afternoon. Owen, Depot Akinyemi set for a move to the Brandywell from National League side York City. That's subject to international clearance. The Candy Stripes confirmed last week that winger Paul McMullen had left the club for Scottish Championship side Raith Rovers. And David Dunn has arrived in France ahead of completing his move to Ligue 1 side Monaco. The 16-year-old joins their academy from Cork City, for whom he made 3 appearances off the bench in this season's Premier Division. City will only get limited compensation for Dunn, however, given he wasn't on a professional contract at Turner's Cross.
Okay. In terms of Euro 2025, then, what have we got?
Well, England have gotten their Women's Euros title defence back on track today. Lauren James scoring a brace as Serena Wiegmann's side were 4-0 winners, I should say, over the Netherlands in Zurich. Wales, who are at risk of going out tonight, take on France in St Gallen from 8 o'clock.
I've got up Tammy Abraham's stats here. It's not good, actually. After the first season, he scored 17 goals in Serie A, and the second season, 8 goals in Serie A. So he went off a bit of a cliff after that. He's on loan at the moment at Besiktas, or just gone on loan there. He was on loan with AC Milan last season. So, yeah, kind of one season wonder with Roma, and then after that, things kind of dropped off a little bit. Shall we move on to the rugby?
Yes, the Lions picking up their 4th win of their tour of Australia earlier, beating Super Rugby side the Brumbies. James Lowe, Gary Ringrose and Josh van der Fleer were among the scorers today in a 36-24 points win in Canberra. It means that the tourists remain unbeaten ahead of their first test against the Wallabies on Saturday week. And speaking to Sky Sports afterwards, head coach Andy Farrell didn't get too carried away in his appraisal of the game.
Oh, well, I mean, same as the other games, really. There was some really good stuff. I thought, especially in the first half, some really nice flowing attacking play that was, you know, played at a nice tempo, etc. But on the flip side, we kept them in the game a little bit. I mean, as far as the story of the game's concerned, I think I'm right in saying that it looked like we dominated field position, etc. But we just kept them in with the sniff, and especially when you get over the line 3 times and don't convert them. So congratulations to the Brumbies. I thought they came out of the box pretty well and stayed in the fight right until the last minute.
Yeah, obviously all these provincial teams are highly motivated up against the Lions. It still does feel as if the Lions are just clicking into gear at the moment, and you just kind of hope that it happens in time for the first test on the 19th of July. So, yeah, it's very hard to kind of see where the optimism is at the moment. Nobody's getting carried away with that this is actually going to be the 3-0 whitewash that a lot of people predicted.
No, I think friend of the show Fiona Hayes would have been annoyed with the amount of times they were held up over the line today. She does not like that. And I know they got a lot of help from the referee today, but the Brumbies gave a masterclass in counter-rucking today. I think that'll be a huge concern for Andy Farrell and for Simon Easterby and the rest of the backroom team in terms of preparing for the Wallabies, and probably gives Joe Schmidt an idea of who he might be able to pick for those three tests, certainly in the pack. But still, getting over the line, the Brumbies is very tricky. They lost that game last time out in 2013, so they're still on track. Again, I'm not quite excited for the series just yet.
No, and I don't think we've got any news on Blair Kinghorn either.
Not yet. He said he's hopeful that he'll make the first test. Okay. We're not 100% sure.
Andy Farrell optimistic on that. You watching any of the lines, Keith?
I didn't get to watch it this morning, but I have been keeping little bits and bobs here and there.
Yeah, there's a bit of a soap opera nature to it. You know, it's like reality TV shows. Someone gets booted off because they're injured. Who's going to be the new housemate? The man who chooses his son. Like, all that sort of stuff is really, really interesting.
I love thinking about it, because they spend over a month together, don't they?
Yeah, longer, I'd say.
6 weeks.
Like, them lads are used to tearing absolute lumps out of each other, and then all of a sudden they're in a hotel and they've got to be nice as pie with each other. I just think, as a footballer, thinking if that was to happen, you know, to get the Wales, England, Scotland, Northern Ireland, Wales and Ireland together, I just think there'd be so many little break-offs and people sitting on different tables and eyeballing each other. I just think in a footballing sense, it wouldn't work. But
how many Irish players would make the British and Irish Lions football team?
Oh, there's a question. Initial answer would be zero.
Cuivin Kelleher doesn't get ahead of Pickford.
No. Yeah, actually, yeah. I probably would take Cuivin, but I've never been Pickford's biggest fan. But he's a solid goalkeeper, but I've never been a big fan of Pickford. So maybe I could wiggle Cuivin in there.
Nathan Collins?
Nathan Collins that plays for Brentford, or Nathan Collins that turns up for Ireland?
The best version of Nathan Collins, so Brentford.
Possibly, and about it, but I'd still, the English centre-halves would probably be the ones.
Yeah, but like maybe, I mean, as he has proven, with better players around him, Nathan Collins looks a great player. It's probably the Ireland games maybe bring him down a notch or two. So one and a half maybe makes the squad.
Huge.
Wouldn't be
huge,
great, guys. Yeah.
Well done.
James has been in touch to say Ademola Lookman did great things when he went to Serie A under Gasperini, so hopefully Ferguson has a similar story. You can get in touch with us 0879 180 180 and drop us a WhatsApp. Where do you want to go next, Cameron?
Go to the tennis zone, because Jannik Sinner is into the semi-finals of the Wimbledon men's singles today, so that the Italian top seed won in straight sets against the American Ben Shelton. Was hoping this would be a five-setter, but it disappointed. I think Shelton lost interest after the first. Sinner's compatriot Flavio Cabali is currently in action against seven-time champion Novak Djokovic in today's other quarterfinal. It's four games all in the fourth set, with Novak Djokovic leading by 2-1 in that one. Iga Swiatek, meanwhile, booked her place in the semi-finals of the women's singles for the first time this afternoon. The eighth seed beat Ludmila Samsonova in straight sets in her last eight clash on centre court. The five-time Grand Slam champion says she's in a good place heading into the last four.
I still feel like in 2023 I had a great tournament, and I was playing good tennis, but obviously it wasn't enough to go further. And this year, yeah, I mean, I feel like I developed as a player and I had time to practice a little bit more. And match by match, my confidence for sure went up, you know, so that I can use it on this championship.
So Swiatek will now face the unseeded Belinda Bencic for a place in the final. The Swiss player won both tied breaks in straight sets for a straight sets win over seventh seed Mira Andreeva.
We have some cycling news.
Defending champion Tadej Pogačar has taken the yellow jersey at the Tour de France after finishing second in today's time trial. He was 16 seconds behind Olympic champion Remco Evenepoel, who won stage 5. Two-time Tour winner Jonas Vingegaard had a bad day, finishing 1 minute and 21 seconds behind Evenepoel, while Ben Healy has moved up to 33rd in general classification, with Eddie Dunbar up to 46th.
I don't suspect have you been at any matches involving a team from Ireland versus a team from the North?
I went to Shamrock Rovers in Larne last year. I went up to Windsor Park to watch that, but it was actually the fella who was just on RT at the minute, Pat Fenlon, got me tickets, and he got me tickets for the Larne end.
No way.
Yeah, I'm not sure, but I think it was about half an hour, 40 minutes in, and Shamrock Rovers were probably 3-0 up, and it was a really one-sided game, and the atmosphere changed a little bit in the ground, so I sloped off quietly after halftime.
Right.
I made my way home, but yeah, I went up, and like Steve was saying, there was a real gulf in class that day, but I think Linfield and Shelbourne would be a lot closer.
Yeah, I think so. Fenlon, of course, an absolute legend in the eyes of Linfield fans. They were up on screen now as well. So 90 minutes to kick off there. We'll get back and over to Steve-O throughout the evening for updates on that Champions League tie. Cameron, thank you for this evening's news. John Keith, you're going to hang with us for the evening for analysis on that game.
Off the Ball Rugby.
The story is it's because it's his son, but if it was, whatever, Owen O'Brien, with that experience, it's his fourth Lions tour, he does it. This is meat and drink to him.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.